I went from a high school dropout to building a seven-figure online company within a couple of months with just talking to AI for 4, 6, 8, 10 hours a day. Like, it was absolutely relentless.
You've been the person who I've been following on this journey who is most excited, optimistic. Everything I've seen from you is like, guys, this will change your life.
Learn to do it, but like, put in the time. It's like Bitcoin. You're not going to get it straight away.
It's an asymmetric bet. Right? Like, even if you're wrong, like, your time wasted is not as near as much as the opportunity cost of not doing it if the AI maxis and the Bitcoin maxis are right.
The money and everything's broken, and it's getting worse and worse and worse. And we've got like 300,000 or 400,000 Australians now homeless because the government's just obliterating the money. It's absolutely worthless.
Hey everyone, Michael here with the Bitcoin Way podcast. Thank you for tuning in. Today on the show, I have Sean Clark, a good friend and partner of the Bitcoin Way. We dug deep into AI. He has been on quite a journey. Fascinating stuff. I mean, these tools are incredibly powerful. If you are behind and you've just been chatting with ChatGPT or whatever your little LLM friend is, this is way bigger than that. I'm going to be digging deep on this very soon. You will get a lot out of this conversation, and I hope you start going down this rabbit hole as well. You will love this conversation. Hey everyone, like I said in the intro, I've got Sean here with me. Sean, welcome to the Bitcoin Way podcast.
Michael Jordan, always a pleasure. How are you, mate?
Good, my friend. It's been a long time coming. I don't know why I didn't reach out to you long, long ago, but I knew I had you on my list and I'm glad we get to talk. I think I found you at like peak Sean time because it's always been Bitcoin. And then lately I've seen your feed more and more interesting stuff on AI. I want to spend a lot of time on that because you're the person I'm paying most attention to who's kind of gone down this rabbit hole. I want to start, though, with we've got bombs dropping and missiles flying, and the world is just, I mean, in absolute chaos. What's your take on, like, as someone abroad, probably a bit removed, I assume Australia is not heavily involved in any of these interventions. Like, what's your take on what you're seeing?
I guess first off, people killing each other. Like, I don't know if it's old men in a room or whatever, and they want to move the chess pieces around. It just seems so absurd that we're sending our youngest people to kill other states' youngest people, really, when the issue is not, I have a problem with those people or those people have a problem with us. It's the people right at the very top. But as for Australia and our intervention, fuel's gone up a little bit, about 50 cents a litre. I was filling up a couple of jerry cans in the vehicles and stuff yesterday. You know, we haven't got fuel reserves strategically for that. So I guess that's the impact here. Obviously, we are fairly far removed. The politicians and stuff are trying to jump in. But I guess my thoughts are, I just don't want to see people dying, Michael. So can we just not get in a room and talk peacefully or whatever? I guess that's, you know, trying to live in a perfect world. But that's what I would prefer. As for what's going on, personally, I've been very removed, head down, focused with AI and Bitcoin. I did see those videos of the missiles flying and things like that. And it looks like the dictator, supposedly from the little that I've removed, has been taken out. But then what happens? Is there a power vacuum? Is there civil war? There's never a good situation for anyone. I don't know if it's better before or it's going to be better now, or there's going to be this long process. But from all the wars, and I just finished reading a book called Chicken Hawk about a helicopter pilot in Vietnam. And they went there, and halfway through, they started to question the Viet Cong, and they started to realize that the Viet Cong were just the villagers that they're fighting and they're shooting and they're killing. And, you know, there's a lot of people get caught up in the mix. And I guess that's wanting to live in a perfect world. If people are willing to go and fight for their country, that's one thing. But the casualties and the innocent victims and stuff, it's heartbreaking.
Yeah, I completely agree. And it's funny, 5 years ago, I would have just laughed at you and called you a hippie. I think as I've grown to appreciate what it is that funds wars, that incentivizes wars, I have a much softer spot for what's really happening. And at the end of the day, it's a bunch of young people going to die for something that's not particularly useful. And they spin all kinds of narratives around it. And it just, I mean, those just roll right off my back. Like, I just don't buy a single word of anyone, any side of the political aisle at the top, explaining why we have to go bomb another country. I think all of the justifications are total bullshit. So that's my take. Interesting, though, Bitcoin is not ripping with this. I know a lot of people have, you know, it's the hedge, and it feels like we're kind of close to that point where enough people understand that you would think we'd see Bitcoin doing something in a world of uncertainty, but seems like a lot of people still view it as speculative. What's your thought? Obviously, I feel like I've been talking a lot more price action just because people are so baffled than I usually care to talk about, but I'd love to hear what you think is going on.
I think ever since we've come off the all-time high from 127 down to 61, I think was the recent low. Like, what an opportunity that has been for anyone. Like, if you're worried about price, just buy, stack and chill, get as much as you possibly can into self-custody, get the Bitcoin way to help you protect it if you don't know how. But in regards to it not ripping, I woke up and I haven't checked the price. I don't know if I've seen the price in 2-3 weeks, maybe. But I went on X and I saw Peter Schiff just having a meltdown over it. And it's like, Bitcoin's at 71,000. You need to sell everything now. It's not going to go any higher. And he's like, Bitcoin's at 73,000. You need to sell it now. It's not going to go any higher. So I was like, I opened up the app. And I've just opened it up here again now, and it's up 5.7% in the past 24 hours. So I don't know. Maybe it is ripping on this news and people are getting it. But I guess for everyone that truly understands it, if the whole world understood it on this news, we'd be at a million or higher straight away. So yes, it's starting to move and it's starting to go back up there. Is it completely undervalued, and is the price under $100,000 USD insane? Very much so. It's an amazing opportunity, but very much it should be higher because of what's going on. Why isn't it? I think there's a lot of misinformation. People are still, they just don't understand. Like, Bitcoin takes at least 100 hours to be able to get a basic knowledge. Everyone's busy. People can speed read that by reading the big print by Lawrence Lepard, but it still takes work. And as fiat inflates more and more, and people have to work 2-3 jobs to be able to stay in the same place, or there are wars going on, people are focused elsewhere, just trying to keep up or trying to just have a normal pace of living, and they don't feel like they need to study Bitcoin, because when they turn on the news, oh, Bitcoin's this magic internet money, it's a Ponzi scheme or whatever it is, it's used for all the nefarious things that Jamie Dimon says. None of that's true, but that's the information they're getting, and they're struggling and they don't have the time, so they just don't put in the proof of work. And I think that's probably more so why we're not at $1 million today, or 10 million, or whatever the fiat number is that people want to do. I think it's just Bitcoin takes people effort, and it's not going to get there. And I think we're just still early. Bitcoin's still very new and it's very different. We've never had a money that's also a technology before, at least in recorded human history.
Yeah, I agree. It like, truly, the proof of work meme is kind of what it comes down to. You have to be willing to, because so many people in my life understand that Bitcoin is a thing that I have a high conviction in and spend all my day thinking about and talking about, and they haven't picked up a book. You know, like,
that's crazy.
It's really just a matter of expending a little bit of energy to zoom in on what it is. Okay, so we'll probably get back to Bitcoin. I want to get to AI. So first of all, I want you to tell a story before. I'm going to ask you a little bit about, like, the mechanics of your setup, because I want, like, this is a very self-serving podcast, I'll be honest. However, you tweeted about maybe a couple weeks ago, you saved like $4,500.
It's gone up a lot since then with software. It's about 10 grand now worth in software.
So what happened? What did you save money on? How did you do it?
Yeah. So obviously, AI is this an amazing deflationary technology. For a little bit of context, so just to be able to set the frame, Jack Dorsey, the founder of Twitter, the creator of Twitter originally, is now CEO and founder of Square. He just laid off 40% of his workforce, 4,000 highly technical coders, computer knowledge workers, and replace them with AI. So that's like on a grand scale, and that's happening more and more and more. In my own life, what I've done is in Christmas holidays, I kept seeing this stuff about OpenClaw, this AI agent that ran on its own computer and can control its own computer. And I was on holiday and I actually wanted to stop and have a break. And it was amazing. I hadn't had a proper, mentally, I hadn't been on holidays for like 5 years. So I was like, I'm not going to get this while I'm on holiday because otherwise I'm just going to go down the rabbit hole. But as soon as I got back to the company and back in into it, I went out and bought a Mac Mini, downloaded and installed OpenClaw on it, set it up. Now, you don't necessarily need a Mac Mini. I just wanted to give it a sandbox space. And I think this is the most important for anyone playing around with AI and OpenClaw. It's incredibly powerful technology. It can take full control of your computer, access everything. So what that means is give it its own device. Don't put it on anything that touches Bitcoin. If you do anything, say on your personal computer, Bitcoin related, don't also install OpenAI or OpenClaw or any AI tool that can take control and look through your folders and everything like that. I think just caution it. But anyway, got that, installed it, set it up, and then started like really feeding it a lot of information on who I am, what I do. So I gave it 90 of my YouTube transcripts, 30 gig worth of X data, whole lot of company emails, and all our company content of what we're doing with our online training business. And then I got to a point where I needed to fill a contract. And with the course at the moment, we hosted on our WordPress website and now own LMS, a learning management system. The organizations wanted to embed the course onto their own learning management system. It's it just needs to be put into a certain file structure, a SCORM file. Pretty easy to be able to do, but that software to be able to convert how our course was into that SCORM was about $2,999. So that was the first $3,000 saving straight away. I got my OpenClaw agent to be able to code and build an app for myself that could do that. So that's the first subscription or software package that I didn't need. The second thing is we need licensing around it. So user limits for this particular organization, just under 1,000 people for 12-month access. To be able to do that and actually make it happen was about another $1,500 worth of software for that functionality. A couple of prompts, and then I built that on top of it into the course builder, the packager, etc. And then the other savings coming from it. So I like built all that, it did it, I tested it, it was incredible. And then I really wanted to increase the quality of the output of how the SCORM looks and what it can do and the functions and features. So I just started working with it and like Googling like the best features that you can use within SCORM files and packages for online courses and stuff. And then just recreated those and then built those into the app, which would have been about another $6,000 of either plugins or to be able to pay for somebody to be able to code and stuff. And obviously I've got no coding experience or anything like that. But intrinsically, I knew exactly what I needed to achieve and how to achieve it. And I'd been looking at all the other products and software that was out there in the market. And I just got the AI to recreate and refine it, for example. And so that's just like one small thing. It's built like little apps instead of a task taking 5 minutes. you open it, you double click, and it fires off that automation for those as well. But like, as for cost savings, someone else with an open claw, like, you're not going to get your AI to go out and build a course package or whatever. It's, you don't need that within your organization. But the point of it is, I did, and I would have had to have paid for it regardless. I probably wouldn't have paid for all those extra features, like the $5,000-$6,000 on top, but I would have paid for the $4,500. I had to have that capability. It just built it, and I can make as many courses as I want. So I don't need to worry about like paying more in higher tiers. Like, if you have more people, like over 1,000 people going through the course, and they charge you more per person, etc. So they really capture it. And I guess the point is, we can all create whatever it is we need specific to our company, our business, our workflows, whatever it is, personalized to us, and then we can keep improving on it, and it can build it with our context, knowing who we are, what we do, and how we need to be able to use it.
Wild. So
it's like a magic box, man. It's like a little genie.
No, I believe you, man. So what percentage of this work is done locally versus you have a bunch of API calls going out? Are you paying a bunch of money to get this done in order to access other models? Like, I'm not fully aware of the mechanic, like the setup.
Yeah, 100%. So just recently this week, so AI moves so quick at the moment, but just this week, Quen 3.5's come out with a local model that runs on the Mac Mini. It's about as powerful as what ChatGPT 4.0 was, like running locally, free, forever. It's yours. It's amazing. To be able to do that build out and everything like that, that's not powerful enough to be able to use. So it is using API calls. I've got a couple, ChatGPT, Anthropic for a little bit. It's been issues with the OpenClaw. Doing it, they don't really like it, so that's not really mainly in use. And then Kimi, which is a Chinese model, it's super capable, it's super cheap. The thing about it being as Chinese is you don't know where your information or your data is going, so being very selective with when that agent that's connected to Kimi, what he's processing, is he just running the task and then pushing things into the background, and also being aware that some things can run locally, they are very slow and they sort of need to happen overnight, and you just come back to something ready instead of waiting on it. But having like GPT 4.0 level local now is absolutely incredible. If we had this last year, we're like, oh my God, the future's here. Now that we've got GPT 5.3 or whatever, we're like, oh, this is a little bit slow. You know, like, we get used to it. If your computer browser doesn't load the page instantly and the video doesn't come or whatever, you're like, what's wrong with this thing? But when we're kids downloading from LimeWire or whatever like that, it could take hours to download a MP3, for example. But that's the setup at the moment. There's Quen running locally, and the main models I'm running Kimi and OpenAI, OpenAI with the codex for the coding and for the app building.
So can you just like through Telegram ping your bot? You named it Lindy, is that right?
Well, I called him Charles Lindbergh after the great aviator, and yeah. Charles's nickname was Lindy. Yes.
Okay, so could you ping Lindy right now and say, go build me a website?
Yes.
And just describe here. And then is something like that, like you want to build like a quick informational marketing website or something. Is that the kind of thing that's low enough processing requirements? It can do that locally. Does it domain name on your behalf?
It could, if you gave it a credit card, for sure. Or they organize. Say again.
Have you given it access to any sort of financial?
No, not yet.
Process?
No. Okay. No, at the moment it's very much sandboxed, and it's just building things in parallel on its own thing. And when I need to get the course, or I'll bring it in there, or marketing material. One thing which is pretty incredible, Michael, is gave it a whole lot of, like, off our website, all information about the course, everything that's happening, and said, hey, like, I want a 45 second animation. Can you make one? And then it just like pulls this thing up on the computer. I'd need to look at the name of the program, and it just makes this like incredible graphic animation that goes through. I'm like, oh, can you add sound to it? It's like, oh, I don't have any access to sound, go here or here. So I just downloaded the sound file, it added that in, and then exported it all for me. And at the start of it, there was on two of the slides out of seven of the slides, and the slides were all animated. It some of the wording wasn't quite right, or it was like bunched up and things like that. And you just speak into your phone, just saying on slide one, can you create a little bit of separation between the two words? And then on slide five, can you like remove that last line and do this? And it's like, yep, done. And then I'll export it again. You've got like another version. So that's like one thing that's just absolutely incredible. You just talk to it and it can do whatever. It can make PowerPoints and images and graphics. As for websites, it's built us a whole dashboard website, everything like that, just from a couple of prompts. And then what it spits out first off is like absolutely amazing. And like a minute, 2 minutes or whatever, it builds and you're like, holy cow, it's something that would take me 10, 20 hours to be able to get to like that level of looking nice and functionality. And there'll be like a couple of little quirks and stuff that you want to change, you'll be able to refine, or things won't work and they won't lead you to the next page where you need to be. And you just talk to it like a human and be like, hey, can you fix this? It's not working. I'd like that button to be a little bit brighter, or can you bring the opacity on? Whatever it is, whatever you can imagine, you just talk to it. And I'll figure it out and it'll change it. And then another 2 minutes later, it's done. Like it's live. So you spend 4 minutes instead of like 20 hours doing whatever it is.
So not a lot of babysitting. So you could, for example, say, hey, let's say you wanted to give it access to a debit card. So you could just, you auto transfer $100 a month, or a Bitcoin wallet. You auto transfer a number of sats per month or whatever. You could tell it, hey, you have a $100 monthly budget, and you can subscribe to tools, API calls, whatever you need to do to get the tasks done, and then just ping me if you need an extra $50 or whatever. And it can facilitate, it can do the account creation, it can do download any tools it needs, it can figure out those tools, because obviously it has access to all of the support pages, YouTube video, whatever it needs to do to figure out how to do the stuff. It's, if it's not already baked in, and it's then learning those skills, like it's refining its ability to serve you in those capacities. Do I have that right?
Yeah. Bang on. And I guess specifically to agents like OpenClaw is, to backtrack a little bit, yes, put a pin in that. With the AI agents like ChatGPT, for example, I've used it very intensively. But it like forget context over time and start to just not remember previous conversations that you've had with it. By giving OpenClaw its own Mac Mini, its own hard drive space, it saves all these different files, and you can give it a soul, so like its personality, which is Lindy the Great Aviator, and to be able to help in specific areas of the business. But then you can give it different skills in those folders. So one of those skills could be, here's like your credit card number to be able to access it. It's got this much. When it runs out, ping me, let me know. But the skill, one of its skills is that it has access to that credit card. One of the other skills is that when you ask it to do something, it'll go out and it'll choose whatever APIs that it needs to do, and then it'll use the skill of paying with that credit card to be able to do it. So you're like building out and you're training it. So it's like I guess the best way to explain it is like a junior employee. They've got a brain, they can think, they've passed school, you know, or university or whatever. So they're clever enough, but They've never worked in your organization before. They don't know your workflows, your work processes, whatever is specific to you. So you need to train them. You need to give them the standard operating procedures and then build out those workflows and those automations. And at the start, it's not plug and play and it's not easy. And there's still updates. And I was helping somebody set up OpenClaw just yesterday. And because of these new updates, it wasn't taking control over his whole computer. The computer wasn't giving it any access at all. So I was like a dumb fucking brick at the moment, you know, and that took us 2 hours and we couldn't quite get it. So it's not like you can just go out, buy a Mac Mini, download it, and then be like, hey, I'm going to make $10,000 in software, or I'm going to give it $1,000 and it's going to go out and trade it into $1 million. And people are doing these things with these AIs, and I did it with the software and different workflows and things like that. Other people have told their OpenClaw agent, like, here's $1,000. If, like, once you lose it, you're dead. So, like, make money, and then it'll go out and make money. People are getting their AI to scrape websites, and this is the sinister side of things, but it's just to give a good example. Scrape websites and then send out like 50,000 fraudulent invoices to companies, and just hoping that they won't look, accounts payable won't look, and they'll just pay it. And they reckon about 1-2% of companies will just pay it. And so they made like $1 million or whatever from doing that. But the point is, like, it can be powerful and it can do whatever it is, and it can make money in positive ways, negative ways. It can save you money. I think more importantly, it's about learning the tools and saving yourself time and tinkering, because overall, this is the worst it's ever going to be. It's only going to get better and better and better and better and better. And to be able to have like Qwen running locally, which was as powerful as GPT 4.0, like on $1,000 Australian, a $600 machine, that's pretty mind-blowing. But all of these things are not going to just, you're not going to download OpenClaw and then it's just going to do it. You have to build it into it, and you have to teach and you have to train, and then you need to stack those skills up.
Okay, what are your favorite sort of plugins that you've identified, like what's been most useful for you personally that, you know, a local LLM isn't going to get you? Is there like image generation that maybe you need like more powerful tools? Is it, you know, video? What in particular has been helpful for you?
Obviously, building out that software package is the most. Editing documents and putting like the initial draft together in various company documents and stuff. It sounds very, very boring. But to be able to go through and to be able to format it in our language, our style, our definitions, in a very like nuanced, focused way, and then to be able to format it so it looks like a really nice like PDF type document, and then I just need to go through and just change a couple of things. So instead of that job, I don't know, taking 4 hours, maybe, or like even for my assistant to spend 2 or 3 hours on it, then for me to spend another 2 or 3 hours on it, it's the initial draft's done in a minute, 2 minutes or whatever, and then I can go through in like 15, 20 minutes for that sort of final edit, polish or whatever, and then it's good to go, because it's got all the past documents, everything like that, so it knows the style, and then it'll lay it out how we want it. It sounds boring or not revolutionary, but that's pretty powerful.
Yeah, I imagine over the course of a week, the like those little time savings, like I'm thinking right now, you know, every day we've got 6 segments going out on our YouTube channel every week. Yeah. And I'm manually typing descriptions that, you know, like that kind of stuff. Yeah. Based on transcript summaries and that.
So here's one for you.
Yeah.
Drop my YouTube video into a Dropbox file. It'll go in there. Into a Google Drive folder, which it's got. So I gave it its own Gmail account. So it's got its own email, which obviously comes with like that Google suite of Drive, not Dropbox. Google Drive. So I drop my video into that, and then it'll go through and get the sub agent to pull out the transcript, and then it'll go through the transcript and everything like that. It'll create the initial title, the description, the tags that need to do it, and then also like a draft post to be able to share on top of that. The next stage of building this out is to get it to go through and then cut out 6 shorts out of each video as well, and then to automate the distribution onto all the platforms, YouTube, Fountain, X, TikTok, Instagram for the shorts as well. It's just the time that it takes to be able to set it up. You want to put a weekend aside, I guess, to get like a workflow, or not even a weekend, a couple of hours on a Saturday to be able to put that into place.
So does Lindy for you, it sounds like it has access to the administrative functions of your YouTube channel.
At the moment, it's not posting on there. It's just giving me that information in a document, and I'll edit it, and then I'll copy and paste it over.
Okay.
Thing with this, and they're getting better and better with their security, and it's coming out and it's almost industry grade level of security, but I'm still very specific to sandbox it. It's its own email. It's not connected to my email. When I've got podcasts and stuff, I will forward the invite to the OpenClaw email so that it knows, and they'll ping me to say, hey Sean, you've got a video with Michael Jordan at 9:30 your time, it's coming up in 5-10 minutes. So I will do that. I guess one of the other things when it comes to AI, and I've reiterated a couple of times, it's not plug and play, but this is the worst that it's ever going to be. And for me, my OpenClaw has been up the whole time, or with very little downtime, and I haven't had any issues. I haven't done the very latest update, as someone had done the very latest update and then uninstall and get OpenClaw to start working. It hasn't gone as smoothly this time, so there's a little bit of troubleshooting and stuff to be able to play around with it. So I guess my messages for everyone with AI and these tools is have patience with it, learn to do it, but like put in the time. It's like Bitcoin. You're not going to get it straight away, and it's not going to create you $1 million business straight away, but AI will make you $1 million business if you put the work in and you use it. Like source, trust me bro, it happened. It's incredible, but it's not. I think the hardest thing, Michael, is we see all these videos and stuff, and I'll create the software from a couple of prompts, and it works just like that. And the websites and the documents and everything that I need, it's just happening. But that came from using AI every day since like 2022. And then the first week that I got OpenClaw is I had 5 hours sleep in 3 days, for example. And I don't encourage everyone for that, but it's just, there's no get rich quick scheme in the world or whatever. Things aren't just going to be handed to you and here's a magic box, you plug in the Mac, you're going to make all this money, it's going to save you all this time or whatever. No, at the start, it's going to cost you time, it's going to cost you energy, it's going to cost you your awareness, late nights, and you have to put in the proof of work. But then once you do that, it compounds, and then it's exponential, and then it's very easy just to be able to say, hey, I need a document related to this. Now, you get the document back, please email it to me. Cool. Can you make an animation to be able to go along with this? We want to put that out on LinkedIn, or can you make a LinkedIn carousel, for example? And it can do all that. It can email, and you just copy and paste and put it over. But I guess the message is for people that already have a business where you've got systems or you've got processes in place that just waste a lot of time, you can start to automate those out instead of just having the human doing all the computer input. It's like AI, human check, AI goes, human verified, accepted, great. And then you move on to the next task.
This is amazing. I can't wait to get started. I'm waiting for my Mac Mini to come. So
let's go.
One question for you. What is, I've heard, you've been the person who I've been following on this journey, who is most excited, optimistic. Everything I've seen from you is like, guys, this will change your life and the way that you work and all of these things. And then I've heard some people who are like, it's going to cost you thousands of dollars, you know, in API calls. It's like the cost is not going to be worth it, or maybe it would be worth it, but I don't have, you know, $5,000 or $10,000 to spend. Is that just specific to what you want to do? Obviously, the more processing intensive, I think the more expensive it's going to be. But for the average person who's just doing the kind of tasks you're describing here, it sounds to me like you're not spending thousands of dollars a month to operate this. Is that fair?
No, it's cheap as chips. And where the cost comes down to is what like LLM are you using? And the best LLM to be able to use was Anthropic. It was Claude, and people were connecting their $200 a month subscriptions through OAuth authentication. So just their subscription to it. Now, Anthropic clamped down on that and was like, absolutely not. You're not doing that. You need to use the API call. And the API calls can get very expensive to be able to do it. So that was where people were spending a hell of a lot of money. And because it's remembering everything and it's putting a lot of context into each window with all its memories specific to you, all that conversation, it's costing you a lot of tokens. Obviously, OpenAI has paid for Peter. I don't know exactly what the deal was. OpenClaw, so Peter's the founder of OpenClaw. OpenClaw's stayed open source, and OpenAI hasn't bought it, but they're very much supporting it. So where I'm getting is with OpenAI, which is like the ChatGPT ecosystem, you can use your subscription, like your pro subscription, which is what, like $49 a month or something like that. I don't know. I've got two pro subscriptions, but we just connected one of those with it, and that's, you know, for the coding, the building with GPT Codex, it uses that, and it's not costing any more. If you were to connect it to the API instead of a subscription, yes, it would cost you a little bit more, not as much as Anthropic, for just the thinking and the communicating, and for the areas where you're not worried about your information going to China. Kimi K2.5 is like $30 or $29 or something like that. So those two subscriptions was $80 Australian. Like even if it's $100 US for what it can build, like who cares?
Yeah.
So to be able to do it.
See.
And then if you need more, sorry, just quickly, just to answer the rest of it. If you need more capacity or whatever, and you're like building out the craziest things and you need Anthropic API, just get it to build something initially with those cheaper subscriptions that gives you enough value or enough time back to be able to pay for the higher API calls. Don't just like throw everything all out at once. Like build it and stack it up slowly. Like any endeavor wants to be cash flow positive as soon as possible. Otherwise, you can't keep doing what you're doing. And if you've got something that provides value, there's no point like going broke before you even start.
Gosh. Yeah. I mean, that makes sense. And I assume too, you can automate this to learn sort of the workflow of, hey, build cheaply, inexpensively, quickly, and then like be thoughtful, so to speak, artificially thoughtful as to when we go to more like of a production level environment, we're willing to pay more. It's going to kind of figure that out, build you like a rougher maybe product, and then you sort of work your way to the more expensive models if you even need to get there. I bet for most people, most of the time, they pay with these subscriptions, they pay $100 a month for a couple of subscriptions in total, and it'll do what they need it to do. Is that probably
fair? Absolutely. Like even just OpenAI, like just that one subscription for 99% of people, 95% of people would be fine. Or Kimi, if you don't worry about your information or you're selective with when you're interacting with that agent, going to Kimi, if you're not worried about it, like send it there. But I think even more to your point, Apple's just announced their M5 MacBook and stuff. They're going to come out with a M5 Mac Mini, you know, later this year. The capacity of the LLMs locally that it'll be able to run will be absolutely insane. But 2 weeks ago, I had another local LLM. The name will come to me in a sec. And it was like when I started using ChatGPT in 2022. Like, it was there, but it was like so slow with it. And you're like, this is just absolutely useless. But then 2 days ago, when Qwen 3.5 came out, backing up a little bit. So 2 weeks ago, when that first AI local I installed, and I was like, oh, this is cool. Like, it works, but it's super slow and it's going to drive me crazy. But I was saying to people, just all we need to do is wait 4 to 6 weeks and there'll be something like better and we'll have a new step change. 2 weeks later, we're going to like GPT 4.0 level straight away locally. Like, let alone the next 4 to 6 weeks, what's going to happen in the next 2 weeks? You know, like every single day, these models are getting smaller, more powerful. And then as the hardware comes out and Apple gets that M5 chip onto the market, it's going to be insane. I think, but in the next, I don't even think it's going to be 12 months, Michael, but most people will be able to get away with running everything locally, maybe even on like a Mac Mini level. If it's not a Mac Mini level, go out and buy an Apple Studio, like fully specced out at the moment, like everything, the biggest hard drives, everything in Australia, it's like $27,000. So that's maybe $18,000-$20,000 US. People, like, I'm not spending $20,000 on a computer. If that computer can replace just one staff member, but what happens if it replaces 4 or 5 staff members, or you've got say 5 staff members and they're using this local AI that cost you $20,000, but now they're 5 times more productive, 10 times more productive? Like, the cost of that is, like, it's non-existent to a business owner, or it should be, and it should be something that they should budget for and start to be able to plan for. And I guess the point with the OpenClaw and instance on the Mac Mini now is, yes, it works. It's a little bit finicky and you need to tinker with it, but you want to learn all these things and you want to learn just how to use it so that when we get to the level where you can run everything locally as powerful as like the best models that we have today, you want to be prepared for that, because they're also not going to be plug and play and you want them to be specific to your situation. It's pretty exciting.
So you're saying you would rather be in a place where you've been training Lindy on a Mac Mini, and as the technology advances, it will be something that you can sufficiently compact that you can put it onto like a Mac Studio, but it's you're basically taking all of its learning that's done with you onto a more powerful machine in the future with better LLMs that can run more localized, and it's you're not starting from scratch when these new machines come out. Like, you have you know, years of data that you've been feeding it. And you're able to take advantage of the new technology much more quickly.
That's right. So to relate this not to AI, but say with my admin assistant, originally when she first came on, I'd show her a task on the computer and we'd get on Zoom and we'd record it. So I'd show her the task, exactly how to do it. She'd watch the video and she'd download the transcript, and then she'd write an SOP, a standard operating procedure, on how to do every single task. She would send me that SOP. I'd check it. We'd get on another call and then I'd read it out to her, and then she'd follow it step by step by step by step. Get to the end. If the result was great, that's the SOP, that's the workflow, that's the structure that we're going to follow. Do this every single time. If I was reading it out one by one, she was following and she didn't get the answer, then all we needed to do was change that SOP. For each SOP, you're probably putting in like 4 to 6 hours for that. And that's like a lot of time where maybe that task originally would take half an hour, 40 minutes, an hour or whatever. So it's taking 600% longer originally, but you just do it once, you do it properly, then that standard operating procedure is in place. The same with the agents now is when you're building out their workflows, their SOPs, the frameworks, they take time, they take effort and stuff. So do you want to wait until AI is where it can run and do absolutely everything? Are you going to wait till that moment where it's super freaking capable? It's super capable now, but you're starting from scratch. So you've got like this amazing tool. It's like a BMW and you've got the learner key or whatever. So it's giving you 10 horsepower instead of 1,000 horsepower. Or do you want to start tinkering now, learning the systems, learning how to build the skills, the workflows, the frameworks, the SOPs? And then when it's ready, either copy and paste them over or your agent can do all that for you. But everything's already automated and you know how that automation has come together. So on the more powerful models, it can then take it up to the next step. And then you can be up here instead of starting from scratch in the future. I just don't think anyone not paying attention, they're just going to get left behind. Like they don't have time, unfortunately, not to play around and pay for it, because the people paying attention now compared to the people waiting for the next local wham bam whiz local model or whatever, they're just going to be so far behind and they're never ever going to catch up. It's exponential.
So it's a bit like Bitcoin, you know, you sort of get AI at the price you deserve.
100%.
Yeah. So what do you think, and I want to get to Bitcoin and AI, and there's been a lot of chatter about this, but I want to hear your thoughts on where you think we're headed. So my echo chamber sort of, I think aligns with you, and like Tony is so excited. I mean, I know you know and love Tony. He's so excited about when this AI is transplanted into human-like droids that can do anything and everything for you. Like he thinks that is like, to me, that's like dystopian, but I understand that's probably where we're headed for him. He's pumped.
Terminator.
Do you think, but then I stepped outside of my echo chamber recently, a couple weeks ago, was talking to a friend of mine, and he's, I wouldn't say he's a normie. He's awakened to a lot of the things we talk about. He's not a Bitcoiner though. But he thinks that the AI thing is way overblown. It's not like, yes, they'll automate some things. There'll be some, you know, some leaps forward with AI. But at the end of the day, you need consumers who have jobs in order to pay for the things that AI can provide. And so it's going to eat itself and die if there isn't something for humans to do. I would love to hear your thesis on where you think the AI economy is taking us.
Yep. I'll dive into that. But imagine if he's wrong and he takes that opportunity. I'm just not going to play out. I'm not going to learn AI and I'm not going to use it. If he's wrong in his thesis, or it's like when people say Bitcoin's never going to work, it's a failed experiment or whatever. If they're wrong and Bitcoin is the apex predator of money and AI is here to stay and you totally ignore them, then you're shooting yourself in the foot. Whereas the worst case situation, maybe you still believe that they're going to fail and maybe they do fail, but what's the harm in learning them? You've learned a new skill, you've paid attention. Like there's no downside to it. And I believe
it's an asymmetric bet.
That's right. Right.
Like even if you're wrong, like your time wasted is not as near as much as the opportunity cost of not doing it if the AI maxis and the Bitcoin maxis are right.
Yeah, that's right. But as for is it overblown? Not in my own life. Like I went from a high school dropout to building a seven-figure online company within a couple of months with just talking to AI for 4, 6, 8, 10 hours a day. Like it was absolutely relentless. And it was like the few years leading up to that allowed me to condense that into it. So is it overblown? Like, fuck no. But fuck no, it's not. How people are like, oh, this thing doesn't make any money. Like, you've got no idea, like ideas flowing or percolating, or you've got nothing going on if you can't save 5 minutes of your time with, like, even when you're saying, when you're trying to get just the YouTube description and everything like that, just the first draft, and to get it formatted so it looks good within your YouTube description, that can save you 5 minutes. And you just chuck it in and you just edit it super quickly. But it's all in your tone, your brand, your voice. It sounds exactly like you. You just make sure that everything's factual, because it can still hallucinate doing that. But could it all just go away and could it eat itself? Sure, it's possible, but humanity seems to always improve on itself. And like the natural state of the market, in the words of the author of The Price of Tomorrow, Jeff Booth, is deflation. And we're going to get better and better and better. And because we can run local models, even if like, I just don't see how they could possibly go away anymore. Like, we've been given this magic box, a genie, three magic wishes that we can ask over and over and over and over and over and over again. And we get those delivered to us every single time. Like, who in their right minds is going to be like, no, AI is like going away? Like, yes, it's going to displace a lot of people. 40%, 4,000 people are square gone. Like, what are they going to do? Hopefully they can leverage AI and they can use it, because they've got the skills. They're already peak of their field, so they can do something better than I can with doing it. But that playing field's stopped. I hope so. But then in regards to what happens, that's when like universal basic income comes in and people are eating the bug soup, and it'll be the haves and the have-nots, the people with using Bitcoin and AI together, and the AI agents are going to use Bitcoin. They're going to have whatever they want. It is like Tony Yazbek always says, it's like Elysium. There will be people in this AI incredible paradise, and there'll be people that are just living in hell. And I was saying this to Tony on the podcast just before. I go down to the beach every afternoon, and in the dunes, there's a couple of people sleeping rough and stuff, homeless. Like, that is so sad. And it feels sometimes like Elysium. I'll come out to this beautiful house with ocean views and everything, and we have nice food and like clean clothes and everything like that, nice lawn. And just like a lovely environment, friends, family, everything like that. If anything happened to us, a medical appointment, an emergency, if our dog gets an allergy and she needs $3,500 allergy medication, true story, we can get it, absolutely no problem. We don't even question it. Whereas some people are living under a fucking canvas sheet on the beach. And what's that from? Like, yes, they've probably made some bad choices. I've lived rough from myself. I've lived out of a car for a while, out of a tent for a long time. So I know what it's like. And it's definitely the choices that I was making. But it's also because the money and everything's broken, and it's getting worse and worse and worse. And we've got like 300,000 or 400,000 Australians now homeless because the government's just obliterating the money. It's absolutely worthless. And so the point is, if you're not saving in hard money that can't be effed with, that can't be manipulated in any way, obviously price, short term's a different story, and you're not paying attention to AI technology that can really leverage every area of your life, then you get into those type of situations where you can prevent it. But yeah, I don't think, like, in regards to your friend, it'll just split. Like, it'll be like that for some people, but the people with Bitcoin hard assets, you know, it's hard in a digital age to say gold will still contain, like, be as useful as Bitcoin. It's worked well for 5,000 years, like in a local economy and stuff. The gold bugs, they're still going to be all right as well, I believe. But unless you're holding gold or Bitcoin or gold, I think people are going to be on struggle street. And then as time progresses and the AI agents more and more take up Bitcoin as their medium exchange, then that's going to eat into that gold market as well. And I was thinking about this last night. There is no way long-term people like look out a little bit. Everyone wants hyper-Bitcoinization today. Like just make it in your own life today. It's not coming tomorrow, but it will come. But over time, the AI agents are only going to accept Bitcoin. It's backed up by proof of work. It's limited. It's scarce. Can't be manipulated. Can't be confiscated. There's nobody going to change it in any way. And they can take 100% ownership of it. Whereas what, like USDC, it just gets absolutely taken, or the government prints a whole lot of money and it's worth less, or something like Ethereum where they changed the rules 300 times over the last couple of years or whatever. No, like it's going to be Bitcoin. So you probably want to get some Bitcoin and then learn to use your AI agent and then train it to be able to accept Lightning or use Lightning on the 402 and exchange things. But it's already happening. AI agents are paying people in Bitcoin to be able to do work. AI agents are hiring humans to go out and do things. They're paying with credit cards. They're paying in stable coins. They're paying in Bitcoin. Like, I don't know. Go out and try build one. Even if it takes you a year or 6 months or whatever, it's not going to happen overnight. Start building one and then give it capacity to connect to the Lightning Network and then go out and do things. But still, like, sandbox the hell out of it slowly. Don't give it access to your personal information. Don't connect it to your personal email. Forward it things to what it owns and what it controls, but don't give it like your personal stuff. Not yet.
Yeah. Man, okay, so Bitcoin and AI, we've just got a couple minutes here. Your final thoughts on how Bitcoin gets integrated, because I know a lot of people are saying, and we talked about this on our live stream earlier today, that, you know, if you do like these, you can sort of model this out, and it looks like the LLMs want Bitcoin broadly, like almost half of them prefer that over stable coins or obviously fiat. It's very slow.
Let's ask ChatGPT real quick.
Is this an experiment you've done?
No, never. Hey, I'm just on a podcast talking with Michael Jordan. I was just wondering, in regards to AI, what type of currency in the future they are going to want to accept? Would it be fiat currency like the US dollar, something like Bitcoin? Would it be something like XRP or Ethereum? What would be the AI agent's best pick?
Well, I can't speak for AI agents as if they have preferences like people, but if we're talking about how they might handle transactions in the future, it would probably depend on the systems we humans set up. AI would likely work with whatever currency is most efficient.
Oh, that's a fucking dense answer. That's ChatGPT for you. It's woke as shit.
Politically correct. Yeah. No, yeah. But I saw a study from the Bitcoin Policy Institute that said like they gave these different conversation, like 9,000 conversations across a number of LLMs, I think. And it was like almost half of them said Bitcoin. And you've got to think that
Grok, Kimmy, but they all say Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Anthropic.
That's the thing, is I actually use ChatGPT as my litmus test. I'll ask it, if I ask it an unpopular historical question, I want to see what it says first, because it's going to have the most mainstream woke bullshit sort of answer. And yeah, if it gives me feedback that seems, you know, out of place for it to provide, I tend to assume it's true. I don't assume it's true, obviously, if it's feeding me the same thing that I learned in elementary school, but it's a good like start. It's a good diving off point. Okay. Hey man, I want to be respectful of your time. I know you're on a tight schedule today. My last question for you, same when I ask everyone, what is an unpopular opinion that you hold? You get bonus points if you offend some Bitcoiners with it.
I don't know if it's unpopular, but the people leveraging Bitcoin in any way are very misguided, and I believe they're trying, like, it's that poor gambling get rich quick mentality, and they don't understand Bitcoin at all. They're not here for the revolution. They haven't put in enough proof of work.
So what kind of people are you describing here? Like what kind of Bitcoiners? Is it like,
well, they're not Bitcoiners. They're shitcoining on Bitcoin.
Yeah, like
they're suit coiners. But anyone that wants to get the world's hardest, yes, it's the best form of collateral and stuff. And for a company to lend you fiat dollars in exchange for your Bitcoin, best business model in the world. Like it truly is. They've got absolutely no risk at all. But just recently, with the last pull down where it came to $61,000, some people that I thought were incredible Bitcoiners that doing amazing things in the space, getting close to getting liquidated, like losing nearly like 90% of their Bitcoin stack, they haven't put in the proof of work. Fucking misguided. So how to describe them? Lazy, misguided, on the nice side. I won't go any worse than that.
Okay. No, I think that's a good one. I don't know if that'll offend our audience, but probably if you can imagine.
Well, most people following you guys get it. You don't trade Bitcoin. You trade everything else for Bitcoin. You don't take leverage on something as volatile as Bitcoin in the short term. You just do everything you can to get as much of it into self-custody. That's it. It's maybe boring, but it shouldn't be exciting. It's just superior savings technology, and then go out and provide value. Use AI to be able to create value, to be able to get more Bitcoin, and just repeat.
Beautifully said, my friend. Sean, why don't you give people a handoff? Tell them where they can find you and anything else you want to point them to.
Yeah, cool. I'll give you a link, but if anyone's interested in learning about AI and Bitcoin over the next year, if you'd like to book a call and learn more, you can. I'll give Michael the link. But G'day Bitcoin over on YouTube. It's also my ex account is SeanClark911. Incredible podcast, incredible guests, an amazing conversation I had recently with Michael that's out there for you to check. But just come over and say g'day. And the final message is what I think is the most important over the next 12 to 36 months to be able to focus on is get an amazing habit stack, build a personal brand, use AI, and save and stack and become sovereign with Bitcoin. If you can sort out those four things, you're going to be happy days and we're going to live in Elysium. If not, it's going to be a hard time for many people. And if I'm wrong and you still learn those things, there's no bad side. It's all upside anyway.
I think that's a great place to close. Sean, thanks for the time, man. Enjoyed the chat and look forward to staying in touch.
Always a pleasure. Thank you.
Cheers, brother. And that's a wrap. Again, I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Sean. This guy is doing amazing things. Go check out his page on X. Go follow him. Go check out everything else he's offering. This guy is a world of knowledge and insight. I think everyone should be paying attention to what he is talking about and follow along on his journey and start taking steps yourself. And of course, if you need help taking your Bitcoin into proper 100% self-custody, go to thebitcoinway.com/podcast. You can schedule a free 30-minute consult with a member of our team. We can talk you through proper self-custody, protecting your online privacy, setting up a privacy phone. We have a Plan B residency option that is getting extremely popular in Panama. Again, it's thebitcoinway.com/podcast. It costs you nothing, just 30 minutes of your time to learn more. If you are enjoying the channel, the show, you like this episode, do me a huge favor. Give us a like, subscribe, comment, share it with someone who you think might be interested. Anything you can do to help feed the algorithm and get the word out about Bitcoin, self-custody, self-sovereignty, everything we talk about here every day. And until next time, stay safe, stay sovereign, and remember, the yield on Bitcoin is freedom.